It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Second hour of Light the Tower here on the Horn. Craig Way, Jeff Howe with you. With you all the way up until noon. Trey Elling's back today on Shirts and Skins with Chad Hastings. So we'll be back there. I started to say clean up from hour number one, but that'd be a lot to clean up.
Boy, that's a lot. Yeah.
Thought it would be that this would be something we could all identify with this, and it was a collectible item, a sports collectible item that not necessarily is collectible to the world, might be, but the main thing is it's something you probably would not want to part with, something that means an awful lot to you, whether it was worth a lot of money or not. So among those.
I thought of one, by the way, Craig. Once you roll through these, yeah, roll through these, and then we'll
okay,
we'll get
all right,
to one.
Yeah, because there's a whole bunch of them.
I've actually got two, but
yeah. So let's see. We'll get caught up. Here we go. Somebody letting us know the guy who had the signed Earl Campbell Ricky Williams football set also have a hat signed by Gus and Augie. Somebody else that have have a pair of ticket stubs from the first basketball game at Jerry World, Texas and North Carolina. Yeah, big game for Dexter Pittman.
You know what's cool? There's a I don't even know if it's there anymore. So when I went to Omaha in 14, first and only time I've been to Omaha for the College World Series, right like. Walking distance from the old Rosenblatt, there's a hobby memorabilia shop.
Yeah, right across the street where all those other ones are.
And
sure.
I wanted, it's the only one still open, and I wanted to, you know, get some kind of College World Series, you know, memorabilia that wasn't, you know, what you get at the souvenir shops around TD Ameritrade. And I'm walking, and I found, and a guy ended up giving me a really good deal on it, an unused ticket stub from the Texas-South Carolina National Championship game.
From 02?
Yeah.
Wow. Not 1975.
Not 75 and 02, yeah.
Okay.
That I bought and put
very nice.
Sitting in my office.
Infertile Merle says, I have a 45-35 tattoo, but it's really faded.
Wow, that's dedication right
it
there.
It is. Tom Emily Wolf fan says, I'm a huge lifetime Syracuse basketball fan. I have a large wall in which are three rows of framed New York City newspaper sports section front pages following the Orange through three historic runs, the 87 tournament run to the title game, the 03 NCAA tournament title run, and the 06 Big East tournament title. Of course, when Jerry McNamara led Syracuse become the first school to win four games in 4 days to win the title. I was thinking it was five that they won. Five games in 5 days. Because weren't they in the play-in thing? I could be wrong about that. We'll check into that. Somebody else with an AAU junior 10 and under inline hockey championship at a convention center in New Orleans. So coach's son and kids and Katrina came 10 days later and flooded New Orleans. I would not part with the team picture with our medals of the team. And, yeah, that's what I'm talking about, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was the McNamara year. It was four games in 4 days.
Okay, there we go. A baseball with the signature of every member of the 68 Tigers and won the World Series that year. A friend of mine in 1989 pulled an Upper Deck number one Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. It's now worth quite a bit.
It's
as Griffey's
favorite.
First and Upper Deck's first. Your favorite?
Yes.
Would you part with it if you had it?
No.
So you wouldn't sell it then?
If I had doubles, maybe.
No, I'm just saying if you had the one, would you sell it? Because I'm trying to, you know.
I've got one, and I have no intention of selling it.
Good. There you go. A 1918 World Champions Boston Red Sox T-shirt that I bought at Fenway in 99, convinced I'd never see one in my lifetime. See? And there's been four since then, right? 04, 07, 13, and then 18.
Hey, Craig, real quick on the Syracuse mix-up.
Yep.
Kemba Walker and UConn, they were the Big East team that
won
the five games in 5 days. Yeah.
Yeah. And they beat Syracuse in the championship, didn't they? I just remember a Syracuse connection there. Look at that and see.
Let me throw this
as
in
you
the
pull
Google
that up. A couple other ones: a Longhorn hat with Houston Street's autograph when he was Rookie of the Year. Our man Jimmy said, "I bought a crisp, brand new Texas Longhorn hat the day I found out I was going to get to play golf with David Thomas. He signed it for me, best tight end ever to play the game at the University of Texas." Eagle Scout says, my dad and I are huge Spurs fans, had Game 7 tickets to the 99 NBA Finals. Never happened. Spurs, it says, won in 6. Actually, won in 5. Said, we still won the tickets. Beat the Knicks in 5. I have a game-worn and signed Cowboys double-star throwback jersey from Emmitt Smith.
They had beat Syracuse in the semifinals.
In the semis. Correct. Okay, yeah. Very good.
And that was an overtime game.
Yeah.
Was that the Johnny Flynn game?
You'll have to refresh me.
Oh, I have something that
I gotta get going. I'm going through the Google machine a lot.
Back in the
today.
Day, I thought I wouldn't sell it, but a Todd Van Poppel rookie card.
Yeah. What's that worth now?
God, probably a quarter.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah.
Hold on real quick. Craig, Snoop, you ever have one of those players that you collected that in hindsight you're like, man, I wish I could have a do-over on that?
Well, you mean having it or just not spending the money on it? That's Todd Van Poppel.
Doing both, yeah. Like, my big one back in the day, because I was in high school when he got drafted, and I was like, okay, I need to get on this, was Darius Miles. Mm-hmm. So I've got a bunch of Darius Miles rookie cards that probably aren't worth
not
the paper
fetch
to put
much.
It on at this point.
Yeah. For you, it was Van Poppel?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Who else? Gosh, there's so many disappointing.
Disappointing
rookies.
So anyway, there's something else. Oh, somebody letting you know, since we were talking hot dogs, my record at James Coney Island is 12 with chili and cheese and 2 orders of fries. That's impressive.
The porcelain you destroyed should have you. They should file assault charges against you if inanimate objects could do such things.
Jeez,
wow,
that sounds awful.
Someone else with an autographed baseball got in the Austin area All-Star game in 2003. The names included John Danks, Nick Peoples, Chance Wheelis, Austin Boggs, Homer Bailey. The list goes on. So that's good. And
Homer Bailey.
Here's somebody with a football helmet he wore in his freshman and sophomore years at Texas, the exact same helmet worn by James Street in 1969 and pictured in the iconic shot of DKR and James conferring prior to the 53-yard pass call in the shootout. And then they show his son, Justin, trying it on when they were shooting my All-American back in 14. That's good stuff. Trucker Tom says, fellas, when I lived in Cedar Park, they used to have a wiener schnitzel. Yeah, right there on Bell Boulevard. It's now a pizza joint. They had 25-cent hot dogs on Wednesday. I'd get $5 for it.
Can I tell you the best story about that wiener schnitzel in Cedar Park?
This has something to do with your dad.
It
doesn't
does.
It? And I don't
love,
remember what
I
it was
telling the story. So this was back. I don't even know if you can do this anymore. But the at-home driver's ed, where your parents can teach you driver's ed. I don't even know if that's allowed anymore.
You used to be able to do it.
Okay. So that's what my dad decided to do. Instead of paying the, you know, $75 or whatever it was for driver's ed, just pay the $15, get the book, and he'll teach me, right? And this was going swimmingly. So I'm really wanting my permit. I'm like, let's go do it. So he makes me a deal. He says, hey, drive me down 183 to the Wiener Schnitzel in Cedar Park, and we'll do permit, license, whatever, and get the paperwork done. I'm like, that's all I have to do. He's like, yeah, drive me there and back in one piece, and let me get some hot dogs, and we'll do whatever. So that's how I
that
ended up getting
did.
My driver's license. All it took was a trip to Wiener Schnitzel.
There you go. There you go. I think Dave Garrett, our the road producer and engineer for Longhorn men's basketball night, hit the Wiener Schnitzel in Lubbock the night before the Texas Tech game because by the time we got out setting up the equipment, there wasn't much else open, but it was fine. Somebody else letting us know the North Texas softball pick. Pitcher, perfect game, all out, strikeout, has that happened before? The answer is no. We did that story in Inconceivable yesterday. Hope Troutwine is her name, and she's from Hendrickson High in Pflugerville. 21 up, 21 down, all via strikeout.
By the way, guys, those Darius Miles rookie cards.
Yeah, where they were.
Not a complete loss, as it turns out, but I ain't, because I got a few of the premium ones, but. Might get me a couple tanks of gas in the car.
Okay, all right.
might get me a trip to HEB on the weekend.
That's more than what I thought it'd be worth.
Yeah,
Maybe not a total
trust
loss.
Trust me, then. Not what I invested in the collection. Trust me.
There you go. Golf Lingo says, Reuben Hurricane Carter signed a picture of a fish he caught. And it reads, any friend of Judge Sorokin is a friend of mine. Dare to dream. He said, what a life he lived. Sorokin is a friend of mine. So those are the kinds of things that we're talking about. Beaver Lance Jason said a few months after One Texas won the national championship in 06, he got that rare framed panoramic photograph of the game seconds before it ticked off. Photographer lost his license from the university. It was never mass produced. Best part of it, I could see myself in Section 16 with my horns up. So he says, best sports day ever. Those kinds of things. That's what we're talking about there when it comes to the collectible of things that you probably would not want to part with. An authentic Charles Woodson, Michigan jersey.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have my uncle's catcher's mitt from when he played Little League and passed away in a car accident a few years ago. It means a lot.
That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly what I'm talking about. Justin Thomas tossed my daughter his glove a couple of years ago at the World at the WGC here in Austin. Ever parting with that. Air Guitar Matt says, I have a picture of the last super regional game of 02 signed by all the starting players at UT when they beat Houston to go to Omaha. I have a baseball signed by then-Governor George W. Bush and Nolan Ryan upon his appointment to the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission in 95. An autographed 8x10 of Bob Lilly, a signed football by the 63 Texas National Championship team, and a team signed 2002 Longhorn baseball bat. Somebody else has a Trayvon Boykin TCU graduation stolen cap. Okay. A Brett Favre, John Elway signed Super Bowl football, not game used, and an autographed Rick Barnes UT hat. The Rick Barnes autograph has now faded. And a Mason Crosby signed football, a picture with him as well. So there's some
That's another card that I want to add to the collection at some point. Not a Mason Crosby card, with all due respect to any of Mason's family that might be listening in the greater Georgetown area. The John Elway rookie card.
Mm.
What is it from the 80? Oh, gosh. It was
83.
It was 84. It was 84 tops, I think.
Yeah.
I got to look at it and see what it is. But something about that card just always appealed to me. So I got to get this Emmitt Smith obsession figured out first before I do anything else on the card collecting front.
The Emmitt Smith obsession.
I'm telling you, Craig, it's like I'm 10 all over again, and I see that card, and I got to have
until
it.
Until you get that card, you will not sleep well.
No, probably not. Didn't sleep too well last night.
Thinking about the Emmitt Smith card?
I even washed my sheets yesterday and slept on clean sheets and still didn't sleep that well.
Thanks for sharing that.
Cleanliness is next to godliness,
yeah,
Craig.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it is.
So real quick, so my piece of memorabilia that I will never part with, there's two. One, Bucky had surprised me when I'd done him a couple favors over at the other place, like some, I think it was the year he and I did a post game over there.
Right.
And so kind of token of appreciation type deal, Bucky got Ricky to sign a football for me, so I've got that. And it's not so much that it's Ricky's signature, it's the story tied to it, knowing that it was work Bucky and I did, so I appreciate that. And then when my dad was sick, this just goes to show you the kind of guy Mac Brown is. I don't know if I've ever told this story before, but I'll tell it here since it's top of mind.
I don't think you have.
When my dad got sick, so this would have been summer of 12.
Okay.
It's 12 or 11, I don't remember. Anyway, my dad had gotten sick, and Mac and I, you can remember, Craig, if you correct me, if it's 11 or 12, I don't know if you remember. It was the year coaching school was in Fort Worth. It was a coaching school in Fort Worth.
And that would have been 11.
Okay. And Big 12 Media Days bumped up right next to it.
Yep.
They were both happening at the same time.
Yep.
So I'd gone over to Fort Worth to the hotel because Mac did an availability, and back then I was pretty much the only person on the Texas beat that showed up to that thing.
Mm.
So Mac and I are doing a walk-off, and my mom had kind of put the bug in my ear, hey, you know, your dad's not doing well, you know, see what you can do. I was like, okay, I'll figure it out. So I bump into Mac, he and I are doing kind of a walk-off. I said, hey, by the way, and kind of explained the situation to him, and he said, just tell Casey Johnson, the secretary, said, send Casey an email, let her know what the deal is. He's like, and I'll get to it. I'm thinking, okay, yeah, he's not going to get to it. Well, so this would have been, what, Craig, probably mid-July, somewhere around there?
Yeah.
Right before the season started, my dad gets this care package from Mac Brown, and it's an 8x10 with a hat and a card, and he wrote my dad a really nice note, so I've got the 8x10 and the note in a frame in my office.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
That's very Mac.
Yeah.
By the way. Yeah. For anybody who knows, you know, that's him in a nutshell.
Yeah. Like I said, I had no idea if he would do it or not, but he followed through. He's like, yeah, just send Casey an email.
Tell her what to do. I started saying, let me guess. You know, when you email Casey, knowing Casey, how great she was, she's probably, oh, yeah, sure. No problem. Because she was so used to dealing with
but
it.
But even then, it's like, he'll get to it and, you know, around Thanksgiving probably, if ever. But
yeah.
Before the season started, it was there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Meant a lot to your dad?
A whole lot. Oh, yeah. A whole lot.
So okay.
That's in my office. And that will never, that's on the wall until I'm no longer here.
See, that's perfect. That's exactly what I'm talking about here. You know, not necessarily a Todd Van Poppel rookie card. You know, it's not going to fetch much anyway. And unless the card would mean to you a lot. If you'd gone to Arlington Martin or something, then that way might make more sense. You know,
yeah, I was from Dallas, so that's why it was special. He went to the A's. I really liked Oakland for some reason.
14th overall pick after the family had told everybody. I remember this so vividly there, working Dallas at the time. And the family said, do not draft us to the Major League Baseball. Don't draft Todd. He's going to the University of Texas. He is not going to play Major League Baseball. And the first 13 teams, including the Rangers, I guess, who were picking fifth, I think, that year or something, all believed him.
What year was that draft, Craig? Was
90.
90?
Okay. Yeah. And then the A's draft, I believe, was 14th overall. They found a way to get him signed.
Yep.
Yeah. Where did the Rangers draft that year?
The Rangers they actually drafted 16th.
Okay.
In that draft.
Okay. Yeah, because now that you bring that up, it made me think about the fact that the question was, would the Rangers draft him if it got to him there in Arlington and everything, and it didn't happen since Oakland drafted him.
Well, you talk about a bad draft to be the star of the draft and for somebody to go reaching. These are just guys that went in the first round of this draft, Craig.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
Tony Clark, Mike Lieberthal, Dan Wilson, Carl Everett, Jeremy Burnett, Rondell White. Oh, and by the way, two Hall of Famers. All those guys I mentioned went to at least one All-Star game in their career. Also going to that first round, Chipper Jones was number one overall. And then at number 20, if the A's really wanted a pitcher, they could have had Mike Mussina.
Wow. Okay. And it's not that Van Poppel was a complete flameout. He had a major league career.
Yeah.
You can pull it up. He was in there. He was in the mix for a while.
Yeah, had spent some time with the Rangers.
He did. He did. So he played for a time. But, you know, the hype that was going into it was a little bit
man
different.
Chipper Jones, dude. I remember that rookie card. He was standing like this.
Do that again. How was he standing?
He was standing, you know. He had his knees bent. He was ready to field the ball.
You remember who else the A's took in the draft that year, Craig? Used the comp pick on him.
Oh?
A sandwich pick on him.
Yeah?
So they drafted the four aces and took Kirk Dressendorfer.
Wow, that's right. Overall. Okay, all right. Very, very cool. I like that it's Snoop doing the striking the pose of Chipper Jones. That's kind of like what I mentioned, the old football card pose, you know, with the quarterback back like that. You'd see it on the cover of Street and Smith's magazine.
Yeah.
When they'd be up, they would be captured in midair, legs spread apart like a jump pass. Back like that.
I always tell Rod, and I want to find it. Because, you know, for making an All-American, there's a picture of Rod Baber somewhere in the Moncrief Complex. I don't know where. But, you know, if you're a consensus guy, you get, like, the nice plaque.
Sure.
But if you're an All-American, like, they used to have your picture on the wall. And it was all, like, everybody's doing that same football pose, Craig, where you're kind of like, up on one leg, like, you're charging.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, you know, you think about those poses, like, like that.
Yeah.
Like, them being done, like, in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
But, like, somewhere, there's got to be a picture of Rod Babers in the Moncrief Complex of him doing one of those poses. And I'm going to find it.
I always like the one that CB sends of him with the six-pack, you know, the one in the half shirt.
Yeah,
that one that he sent before there, but you're right. Yeah, the charging one there.
I want one that's like I just want to see like Rod Babers and like I don't know was name me another UT Alabama. Hub Bechdel doing like the same the same pose.
Or I'll give you another one because I've never seen it. Just Steve Wooster.
Yeah,
like that. You know, yeah. Running. You know, from the 69 team. He was on the Look Magazine All American team. Yeah. Had the Bob Hope All American Football Special where he's there talking about it, and you know, there's a. These are the linemen that eat people for lunch, you know. And so they always have the one liner, and he'd move on to somebody else or something. Yeah, and he was talking about Wooster being the great running backs or something that don't wait for people and all that kind of stuff. So
at least they used to have photos of the All Americans. I don't know if they do anymore, and I don't know where some of that stuff is going to be when the next time we go into the Moncrief Complex, Craig.
Yeah.
Which will be different than the last time we were in there.
It certainly will be. They continue their work on the South End Zone project to get all that finished. All right, up next, we talked about a lot of Longhorn different things, but we have the substantial meat and potato segment, the Longhorn Notebook coming up, with more notes from Coach Sark's media availability this morning and some other items as well as we continue here with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We are live, local, and digital, and viewed by those of you on Twitch at the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Longhorn fans, his name is Chris Beard. He is your next basketball coach, and he is not scared.
The University of Texas winning tradition and pride will not be entrusted to the timid or weak. I promise you, I'm a lot of things, but timid and weak are not two of those things.
Catch all the games, the chatter, the breakdown, and Longhorn Weekly next season with Texas Longhorn basketball on the Horn app, and at hornfm.com.
Maybe it's apropos that we say get ready, the name of this song there, you know. So, we want you to get ready to let you know that, this falls within the framework of the notebook, so let's
Jeff
just have
Howe's
that.
Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
Tomorrow, right at about this time, in fact, around 11:20 tomorrow, new head basketball coach Chris Beard will be on the program with us.
Yeah.
So Coach Beard will join us tomorrow.
Sweet.
So he'll be on with us tomorrow morning around 11:20. So we'll look forward to having a conversation with Coach Beard tomorrow. So that falls within the notebook. So get
that
ready.
That does. Yeah. Filling out that roster. And I'm sure he'd already gotten the good news, but got some good news last night. The public did. Jace Febres makes it official. He's coming back for another year. And Craig, you know, Chris Beard's seen a lot of Jace Febres over the years, including had that knee injury February of 2020 in a home game against Texas Tech. But you look at Jace, that five-game winning streak they had at the end of the year, coming off the bench, he averaged 9 points per game, was playing about 20, 21 minutes a game, shot 48% from three, 13 for 27, and in that quarterfinal win over Texas Tech in a Big 12 tournament, 15 points all on threes. 5 for 9 from three in 24 minutes. So, you know, if Jace is right, we know Jalen Tyson, at least in his prep career, his young basketball career, has shot the three pretty well. So you're starting to, you've at least got two pieces that you feel like, okay, can give you some perimeter scoring. So it's a start. It's a start as you start to cobble together this roster.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And the question's been raised about how Jace might fare and perhaps even better in the motion-related offense that Chris Beard has run in the past. That's not to say to pencil him into saying he's definitely going to run, you know, this and nothing more than that, but might work out well for him.
Yeah, and I think you can agree with this too, Craig. You know, I hate when people do that in a conversation, and I just did it. So my bad for that.
What?
Saying, I'm sure you'll agree with this. Like, yes, Craig.
I told you, the champion, point. And he laughs about this. He and I talk about this. The champ, the all-time champ of that is Bill Schoening. Bill would say, I'm sure you agree with me, Craig. Point, I'm going, well, maybe I won't. I don't know.
The point I'm about to make is so profound that you're just going to agree with me. But no, Jace is a guy that I felt like, especially last season, the 19-20 season, when he started to play better and started to put together consistent performances, I would have liked to have seen more stuff drawn up for him, whether it's getting him free off of screens or whatever,
right,
freeing him up to get shots.
And now, this offense is better geared for that.
Yeah, so I think it will be a fit. And honestly, like, Jace is better defensively than I think people give him credit for. You know, at least the tools are there for him to be a good defender in terms of quickness. He's got quick hands. So knows how to play passing lanes, good basketball, like the basketball IQ part on that end of the floor. We've seen it develop during his time. So I think this is a pretty good fit for him.
I agree.
For Chris Beard. And I think he agrees. Otherwise he wouldn't be coming back and he'd be going somewhere else to play his final
right.
year of college basketball.
Yeah. And I'm sure Chris Beard's happy to have him. So we'll visit with Coach Beard tomorrow. About 11:20 on the program tomorrow.
Yeah, really quick too, Craig, on the basketball front. So people have been asking us a lot in terms of the portal, like who can Texas add? What pieces
right.
are they looking for? Snoop, this is a guy you can comment on. You and I talked about him before the show started. Dylan Disu, Pflugerville Connolly product.
Yes.
And from Vanderbilt, he's in the portal right now. Led the SEC in rebounding this season, 15-point per game scorer. 9.2 rebounds per game, by the way. Could be a transfer candidate that could end up at Texas. And we know, Craig, this is a program that losing Kai Jones, not expecting Jericho Sims to come back, although he's still got a decision to make, not expecting Greg Brown to come back,
right.
although he's still got to publicly declare for the draft. You're going to need front court bodies because everybody loves Brock Cunningham, but Brock can't play three positions by himself. So you're going to need help in the front court. And Dylan Disu is a guy that at least right now is on the radar.
Yeah, okay. That's another guy to watch very carefully.
Snoop, you liked his game?
Yes.
Connolly?
I would say before Greg Brown broke out, I want to say Disu was the area's top local hooper. He was cold-blooded at Hendrickson. Just long, athletic. Plays above
Did
the
I
rim.
Say Connolly, I'm in Hendrickson.
Hendrickson, yeah, and he plays defense. So that's what Chris Beard likes, right?
Yes, he does. And then, of course, as you mentioned, you were on the Coach Sark media availability.
Yeah, and a lot of quarterback talk. I'd say probably over half the questions Sark got today were related to the quarterback position. Reiterated again, Craig, he came into this deal with no expectations for either quarterback because really, I mean, I go back to this when we talk about this quarterback battle. Like, yes, we saw Casey Thompson play in the Alamo Bowl, but it's such a small sample, and you look at the playing time Casey's gotten over his 3 years in the program, I mean, it's just not that much. It's not a huge sample size, and it's not, yes, he's got the experience over Hudson Card in terms of he's been in the program longer. But in terms of in-game reps, again, I'll reiterate my favorite statistical anomaly going into the season. Steve Sarkisian is the first Texas coaching hire in the post-Daryl Royal era to take the job and inherit a quarterback room where there's not one single game of starting experience in that room.
Wow.
So really, you really are starting from scratch. And he said he had no expectations for these quarterbacks. He said both guys have thrown the ball well. Both guys show a really good grasp of what they're being asked to do within the offense. He's pleased with where they're at. But this is a big step. Getting them to be more natural and less robotic. And a lot of quarterbacks, as you learn a system, you're learning it for the first time, it's different. You know, I think conceptually, Craig, quarterbacks now at this level are further along than they've ever been just because they play so much 7-on-7 and with everybody running some form of spread offense, a lot of that stuff translate, but it's about learning terminology and protections and footwork and all that kind of those nuances that go into it and trying to get those guys, again, to play a little more natural, a little more free-flowing and not as robotic. So that was something that stood out to me on the call. The other thing, talking about quarterbacks too, and he always goes back to this. I think this is going to be a big Sark talking point, whether we're asking him about how this quarterback battle is going or you hear him talk about a quarterback on signing day. What's the most important trait for a quarterback? And he was asked this and the question was framed too about, you know, can you teach accuracy? You know, Mike Leach is one of those quarterback guys that always says accuracy is one of those things you can't teach, and you either are or you're not. And, you know, Sark said you can enhance accuracy, but the guy has to have a knack for throwing a catchable ball. Some guys do, some guys don't. He said both Hudson Card and Casey Thompson do have it, but he said that's his most important trait, Craig. When you talk about the physical stuff, does he throw a catchable ball? And it sounds so simple when you hear him talk about it, but we get so caught up in, you know, height, arm strength, 40 time, quickness, all the other stuff that we talk about when we talk about quarterbacks. But Dark said at the end of the day, it boils down to it. What's the main goal when you snap the ball and call a pass play? Can you complete the pass? Can you get the ball completed? And does a quarterback throw a catchable ball? And again, he said both of those guys. Dude, I thought this was funny. He was asked about, you know, can a quarterback be a game manager for you, or does he need to be a guy that can create explosive offense on his own and do some dynamic things? And he was talking about his time at Alabama. He said, well, you know, the guy we had last year, some people called him a game manager, and he threw 50 touchdowns. So,
yeah,
some people called Mac Jones a game manager, and I'd say he ended up pretty good.
Managed it pretty well.
But this is another one of those simple things, Craig, that you hear it and you think about it, and you're like, well, yeah, that does make sense, because we never hear about it. Like, the quarterback's job is to manage the game. This is something like Tom Herman talked about too. Like, yes, it is your job to manage the game. You've got to know down and distance and situations and the clock and how many timeouts you have. So you're always thinking about that stuff at the quarterback position. So by definition, your job is to manage the game. So really, I guess if anybody's looking for who's got the upper hand in this quarterback battle right now, too close to call might be a good way to put it, but Craig, it just tells me that this thing has a long way to go. And I think this is kind of, for me, this is the scenario in terms of looking at what's best for the program. This is the scenario that I hoped would play out. Not that you didn't want one of these guys to just go out and win the job. If that happens, great, but both these guys now have a reason to be invested. They have a reason to take this thing into the summer where they'll be on their own in some cases, and you've got to put in the work and in the summer 7-on-7 sessions and whatever you're going to do, throwing on the side with guys during summer workouts. It's going to keep one of these guys out of the transfer portal, which that to me is the big thing. Can you get to camp with this competition still going and both of those guys still in your program? So that's a really big part of it. So it sounds like at least it's trending in the right direction. That quarterback battle is for where Steve Sarkisian wants it. Speaking of trending in the right direction, I thought this was interesting too, Craig. He was asked about what he's excited about right now at this point through 9 practices. Practice 9, by the way, was this morning, in case anybody's trying to keep track of practice numbers. Yeah, he said he's excited that this program has made a lot of strides. Like, they've got their schemes implemented. They've been through winter conditioning, so everybody kind of knows how the strength conditioning program works. He feels like they've seen growth and development, both in terms of individual guys and as a team. That said, he knows how much further they have to go. So in that vein, what is he excited about? He's excited about the trajectory that they're on. Feels like they're on a good trajectory, which is always good to hear. He said the challenge now, obviously, can you stay on that path, that, you know, that growth trend, and keep that going and be ready to put a good product on the field come September 4th, which is, you know, at the end of the day, that's what this is all about. So we talked about earlier, just to reiterate from the first hour, just in terms of names, guys stepping up at that receiver position to go along with Jordan Whittington. He mentioned Joshua Moore, again, proven commodity, not really worried about him. But Marcus Washington and Kelvonte Dixon also starting to apparently show out well in practice. That's good news. And then the young linebackers, said Jalen Ford's flashed the time, but man, he really gushed about David Benda, like no hesitation. Wow. So David Benda has been terrific and spoke in glowing terms about David Benda and what he brings to the table. And again, it's prime, just like those guys are receivers, this is a prime opportunity. Like, you know, DeMarvion Overshown is going to have a role, and we're all under the assumption that, okay, they're going to go into the portal to get an inside linebacker, or can these less experienced guys that you have in that room, can one or two of those guys step up and emerge from spring ball as a starting caliber player? And it sounds like David Benda certainly on that track. He did talk about Bijan Robinson a little bit. He was asked about just what's his impression of Bijan's talent level. I love the breakdown. Said he runs with a low center of gravity. Think about the Mike Shanahan Denver Broncos, Craig, and see if this description isn't one that you've heard before. He's a one-cut guy who can get vertical up the field. really fits into a zone running scheme pretty well. Not that Bijan wouldn't fit into any scheme, but I think the some more outside zone stuff that I think they would want to do fits in pretty well. Also says he uses his weapons well. Talked about him being a natural catcher of the football. And that was something I talked about with Bijan as a prospect. Like in the previous offense, the you look at kind of the, I don't know, Craig, like the checklist of things that H receiver needed to have. Well, Bijan Robinson could go to the H position and play it in that previous offense, and I think play it really well. But still, like a lot of young running backs said, the main thing that they're working on with him right now is understanding protections. The pass pro side of it for
it's
running
always
backs.
Always an important thing.
It's always the kind of the last thing to tie everything together. But again, he reiterated, they've got two really nice players with he and Roschon Johnson, and I think this is something, Craig, that we'll get in tomorrow in the notebook, definitely in the first hour, because you know, Chris Beard's going to occupy notebook time in hour number two. So this is something I'll get into tomorrow. But in terms of, you know, personnel packages on offense, like we know Tom Herman loved 11 personnel. They were a base 11 personnel offense, one tight end, one running back, three wide receivers. Steve Sarkisian's not, and I asked him this the other day after the scrimmage, he said, look, he's not going to pin this offense down and say they are an 11 personnel offense or a 21 personnel offense. They want to have personnel packages that take advantage of the talent they have on hand, of the personnel they have. And Craig, I've seen some people maybe try to frame it. I got some of this feedback on the flagship message board at Hornets 24/7. Well, I mean, is this a battle now? Is Bijan fighting for his job? No, and Sark even hinted at this on Saturday. I think you might see a situation now where maybe you are more of a two-back offense than a one-back offense. And maybe that's something they have to look at. Do they need to be more of a 20-personnel offense, two running backs, no tight ends, or a 21-personnel offense with a tight end on the field? Because we know they've experimented with some two tight end looks and trying to really see what they've got in that room. So I think what it all amounts to, Craig, is times are a-changing, and this offense is going to look a little more diverse than we've seen it look in previous years.
That sounds good to me. I kind of like the idea, the thought of all
so
of
in
that.
Other words, Craig, that chart you fill out when you fill out your charts for games and you're looking at that Texas starting offense, you might need to see what that looks like and have, like, maybe in case they open up in some 21 personnel, maybe have some flexibility with the chart in 2021.
Well, what it'll have is, he's talking about my broadcast charts, and my son Andy Way prepares those. So you'll
you got your baseball chart with you?
You know what I left in the car?
Did you? Okay.
I left the I'll bring the one tomorrow.
Okay.
In fact, I'll even bring a football chart tomorrow.
Yeah, I want to show the folks on Twitch kind of what your chart looks like.
For instance. And so sometimes there are more than 11 positions on the field. There'll be 12 because, you know, some teams will list, Oklahoma's one of these, list a fullback, but not necessarily have the, but it's just a separate position listed fullback, different than an H-back, different than tight ends and all that. So they would actually have like 12 different positions. Obviously, you can only have 11 on the field at the time, but when they go to a fullback, this is their group for that. When they have the extra tight end, this is what they do with that. So you have to make room for all of that sort of stuff. So, when he prepares the chart, he'll do that. But B, it keeps him handy with his laser pointer, you know, in the broadcast of, you know, getting it right to who's going in, the personnel going in and out at the time as well. So that's a big part of it. But I'll bring one tomorrow. We'll take a look at that. All right. We've got a few minutes left and a few things left to wrap up, which we'll do when we continue to light the tower here on the Horn, where we're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
D&E. All right, good Tuesday, ATX. Snoop Daniel from my friends at CustomAthleticApparel.net. Give my bro Desi Ibarra a call for all your quality sublimated and tackle twill uniform needs. Direct-to-garment printing, no minimum order or no setup fee. 512-567-2334, CustomAthleticApparel.net. Now, both Vandergrift and Dripping Springs are continuing on to the UIL State Final Four in soccer, and I'll be making the road trip tonight, and CustomAthleticApparel.net helps power my coverage. If you support Austin area high school sports, then support those that support 104.9 The Horn. Support those that support us. CustomAthleticApparel.net. 512-567-2334. CustomAthleticApparel.net.
Light the Tower with Craig Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel.
Got a few minutes to go here on the program, going back to something that somebody just said, Craig, is it safe to say that don't bother me at all? No, the actual phrase is, that don't make me mad at all. Yeah, that don't make me mad at all. That was the actual thing. That don't make me mad at all. It's from my man Josh at Office Depot when he says that. That don't make me mad at all. When talking about what you were talking about with what they might do.
A little versatility.
Yeah.
Hey, real quick, Craig, before you run those down, one quick hoops clarification. I got an inquiry about this on the text line.
Okay.
Something my colleague Chip Brown mentioned at Horns 24/7. This isn't like an official report. It's just a message board post. Hearing Andrew Jones is coming back. Now, that's not official, set in stone. Andrew hasn't announced it, but he had a decision to make, Craig. And I don't – pre-coaching change, it was pretty – I think he was in that Jace Febris group where I felt pretty good. I think everybody I talked to felt pretty good about him coming back. And we talked about it last week, Craig, that Chris Beard, kind of his first main priority. It's a lot of stuff on his plate, but – get with the guys from the roster from this previous team that had a chance to return, which they all do, and figure out what you got there in terms of what's coming back on the roster. So
yeah,
those conversations were ongoing at last check, but it's not official, nothing official yet on Andrew Jones, but it does sound like it's kind of where it's trending right now.
It'd be great if Andrew made an announcement like today, and then when we have Coach Beer on home with us tomorrow, we could talk a little bit about that as well. So
still
hopefully
got Courtney,
it's
Courtney Ramey, obviously, still with the decision to make as well.
So. Yep, absolutely. We had tossed out the question if there was a particular type of sports memorabilia, something that meant an awful lot to you that you probably would not sell. What might it be? Somebody else, I've got a VY jersey signed before the start of the championship season. Ambulance driver talking about when we were talking about the hot dog said your staff should have a hot dog eating contest.
Oh, that's a bad
one.
You'd win it.
Well,
you'd win it.
I'd win, but I'd really – when you win a hot dog eating contest, you
really do you really
lose.
Win?
Yeah.
Do you really win? Yeah.
Exactly.
That's a good point. Someone else has a Chance Mock signed Longhorn hat. Said it's special to me because he was the first player I remember. It was at Hooters on Barton Springs. He was eating with other players, but he took the time to talk to me. Will always be my favorite Longhorn because of that. Someone else had my McCallum Knights lacrosse jerseys, home and away, number 3. That's pretty cool. Snoop has had some encounters with lacrosse, like over in St. Andrews.
Hey, yes, and Lake Travis, Westlake play each other tonight.
There you go. All right. Someone else with a signed helmet from Colt McCoy. My uncle's autographed rookie card. He pitched for the Braves and Rangers. Adrian Devine, remember that name, passed away last year. I have a game used team signed trash can from the Astros dugout. Cute. Especially poignant given the fact that A.J. Hinch was there last night, you know? Big return there.
What do you think a Keith Moreland rookie card goes for, Craig? What do you think one of those goes for?
I don't know, but you know what? Bill Harwell, our producer, Longhorn Radio Network, he said, what do you think this is worth? It's a picture of Keith. It was a great-looking card with him, and he had a beard, too. It was in the Phillies uniform there. I'll have to show it to you. All right, we're done with the program today. Hey, tomorrow, Chris Beard, Texas Longhorn basketball coach, joins us in the 11 o'clock hour. We invite you to stay tuned because up next will be Shirts and Skins. Trey Elling's back to join Chad Hastings for that. That'll be followed by RBKD, the triple option, Rod Babers, Brad Kellner, Kevin Dunn. For our man behind the glass, Snoop Daniel, our producer, and also for my co-host, Jeff Howe, I'm Craig Way. We thank you for joining us. We'll visit with you tomorrow at 10 a.m. right here on Light the Tower.
B&E.
So here it is, this show, this reality show. They're fixing up houses.